How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
By the Norman Transcript, I'm your host, Greg Kapp. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And on iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, and you can subscribe to the podcast there. If you're noticing the natural sound, I'm doing this from the hallway at Madison Square Garden right now, and I've got, you know, we're doing back-to-back guests today. So, Jared Dubin, Locked On Knicks host, man of the internet once again. Jared, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, man. That was a fun game.
Yeah, that was a fun game. I feel like we're talking too much lately, though.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Sometimes you just have to talk to people you don't like that much, and I'm sorry for you that it had to be me.
In the natural sound here in MSU, they're like cleaning up the garden right now.
Yeah, I do hear that. I feel like we have to start with the point guards here, right? I mean,
yeah.
Westbrook, 27, 18, 14, now averaging a triple-double on the season, 30, 11, and 10. He is not a human, maybe?
I can't really prove that he is one. He almost had a triple-double at halftime. Like, he was 14 points, 10 boards, and 9 assists at half. And he almost got that triple-double. You can tell he wanted that. I am fully convinced that he wanted that triple-double.
He 100% wanted it. That's why he passed on the last play of the half. And he should have had it, too. Porzingis got a hand on the pass at, like, literally the last possible second. Otherwise, it would have been a pretty easy dunk.
Yeah, he went into the rim. Like, he came real close to a triple-double in the first half, which is just an unbelievable. We can talk about the point guards. I mean, look, something that helps make the point guards look good. Oh, that's a nice sound, isn't it? Something that helps make the point guards look good is just the fact that, I mean, look, neither of them, I thought, had the greatest defensive game in the history of the NBA. Both those guys were kind of blowing by one another, and the fact that Andre Robertson, you know, has to guard a wing in this kind of game makes Derrick Rose look a little bit better and getting to the rim and finishing. But Rose had some really nice finishes around the basket, too.
Yeah, he kind of got wherever he wanted on the court, whether it was Westbrook on him or Oladipo on him later in the game. Rose still was pretty much able to get wherever he wanted with his drives to the basket. He had a couple of dishes off the drive early in the game. He had one that was it was a really nice pass. I think it was KP under the basket. After the first, I think, 4 minutes of the game, he had one assist the rest of the way. Some of that was the fact that when he got to the rim, he found himself at the rim. And some of it was him putting his head down. But I thought, you know, offensively, in terms of dictating the flow of the game with his drives, that was as impressive as he's looked all season. Like you said, though, the problem came on the other end, because until very late in the game when the Knicks switched Courtney Leon to him, Rose was on Westbrook for the most part, and he gave away every bit of the 30 points he had at the other end.
And Russell, unsurprisingly, like he feasts when point guards are defending him. It's pretty rare that you see a point guard on him. It was always pretty often that you saw a wing on him in the past, and it's happening even more this year for very obvious reasons, because teams don't have to put a point guard, you know, they don't have to put their best wing defender on Kevin Durant now. They can just throw, you know, obviously, like, Kawhi Leonard's an extreme example because he's the best one out there. But, you know, even a team like, you know, the Knicks, they can crunch time, throw Courtney Lee on a guy like Russell Westbrook, because the Thunder don't have that luxury of a ball-dominant wing. And, and there's a big enough drop off between him and Oladipo where the decision is easy. You put your best guy on Westbrook, and he often doesn't really go up against point guards that often this year. And when he does, like, he loves going to the rim when a point guard is guarding him. And that's really when he's at his best. I think we'll both agree on that. And he just beasted that in that sense tonight. But you know what? Honestly, his rebounding was the most impressive part of his performance.
100%. That's where I was going next. He snatched one.
Crazy.
He snatched one out of KP's hands. Like, KP is a foot taller than him. A foot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's 6'3". Porzingis is 7'3". And that dude just jumped, like, straight over his head and snatched the ball away. He had another one in the second half where he jumped over, I think it was Melo and Hernan Gomez at the same time. He sort of came in from out of bounds. He just had, I mean, I remember, like, a few years ago he had this ridiculous rebound to clinch a game against the Clippers. And he made me, like, jump out of my seat with that one. And the two tonight that he had were even better. Like, they were just absurd.
He did that against Andre Drummond on Saturday. Like, it was better than the Porzingis rebound tonight, the one that he grabbed away from Porzingis when he, like, was behind him and kind of, like, jumped actually higher than him. And Steven Adams even talks about that play after the game, where, like, Steven Adams was just like, whoa, that was a remarkably nice play, and Steve Adams doesn't get excited about anything that happens on a basketball court. But the Andre Drummond one on Saturday was a nicer play, because he did it with one. I don't know if you saw the Drummond play. He did it with one hand. Like, but he did it like three or four times tonight, where I was just like, oh my god! Like, obviously Russell Westbrook is the best rebounding point guard in the league. Like, that's not a discussion. Dude's averaging over 10. He's averaging a triple double now. He's averaging over 10 rebounds a game at the point guard spot, and I think his rebound rate after this one is over 16%. Like, his rebound rate is better than Anthony Davis's right now, which is just so crazy. But I do think he is the most fun rebounder to watch. Like, he gets the most majestic rebound of any player in the league. Just the way that he soars over guys who presumably should be getting so many of these rebounds over him. Like, pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, look, there comes a certain point where you just run out of superlatives about a guy. And, I mean, I hope I never reach that point with Russ, because he's my favorite player in the league. Like, I don't make a secret of that. He's my favorite guy to watch. He's my favorite guy to root for. But it's getting pretty close to the point where it's one of those there's nothing you can say anymore type of things, because he just does everything and so much of it. And obviously he was like that throughout the game tonight, until he missed a few shots in a row at the end of the game trying to force a little bit. And that's why I think it's important to talk about the guys who brought Oklahoma City back in the first half and sort of cemented the lead in the second. You know, Anthony Morrow hit a bunch of, I think, three catch and shoot threes, where he had the ball for like a combined half a second before he put them up. Enes Kanter obviously was all over the boards all night and just dominated, whether it was Joakim Noah or Kyle O'Quinn or Hernan Gomez or Kristaps. He dominated all of them from the post. And then Andre Roberson, who we talked about before the game, how he would probably guard Melo all night. And he did that as well as anybody has all season. Melo was 4 for 19. Wound up with 18 points on 19 shots, but that's only because he went to the line 11 times. Roberson basically lived inside Carmelo's jersey all night. And those three guys, I feel like, obviously Westbrook was ridiculous and there are no words for it, but those three guys I thought really pushed OKC over the top, because the Knicks did not get play like that really from any quote-unquote role player. It was Rose with his 30 points, and KP made a few shots early and then late, and they did not really get anyone that had the type of impact those three guys did for OKC.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, let's talk about Roberson for a second. This was, I thought, one of his best games, overall games of the season. I thought he had some nice cuts. You know, he hit like a couple of catch and shoot. He hit one catch and shoot three, which was honestly the most impressive catch and shoot three that I ever remember him shooting where he went up in rhythm, like, from the left, from the right wing, and, like, hit a turnaround and swished it in. And I was like, I don't remember him seamlessly putting up a shot like that. He always hesitates when he gets it on the wing. And I was like, well, I'm not arguing that is a thing that's going to continue. I'm just saying in that particular moment, it was the most impressive catch and shoot three I remember Andre Roberson making.
Yeah, he hit another one from the corner on basically the same thing. Like, this game defensively is like when he goes to talk, when his agent goes to talk to Sam Presti about an extension this summer, like, this is the first game that he should show Sam Presti for his defense.
Well, you gotta watch that Houston game, him on Harden.
Oh, no, I saw that game too. I thought this was just like, he gave no quarter. Carmelo was completely flustered the entire night and never had anything going at any point.
No, I mean, he was fantastic. And something that I've written about before, which is not just his ability to play one-on-one, and I'm gonna ask you something after I make this point, but it's not just his ability to go one-on-one, it's how the Thunder are able to use him because he's so good as a one-on-one defender now, and that the Thunder don't switch on ball screens when he's guarding a ball-dominant guy like Melo or like Harden or anything like that. They don't shade over help. There aren't really defensive breakdowns, and because of that, they don't have to rotate as much. Their defense isn't as chaotic. The rest of the defenders aren't making split-second decisions. They're just kind of moving naturally within their defensive scheme, and that makes things so much easier on someone like Steven Adams, who's already a good defender, especially Adams, but especially someone like Domantas Sabonis, who's a rookie and is still learning team defense. And if you can limit the amount of decisions that he has to make, if you can limit the amount of decisions that, you know, Oladipo has to make, that Westbrook has to make, if you can limit their movement, like, that is so helpful for a defense when part of what Melo does so well is forcing defensive breakdowns and getting those kinds of shots. And if you can limit what he does in those sorts of things, then it's just going to make the team defense aspect so much better. I think that's a massive help, what he's able to do in that aspect.
Definitely, and I think you saw that at different times throughout the game. You know, some of it played into the Knicks' hands because they, at certain points, were just saying, like, okay, well, we'll just let Rose go to the basket, and there might not be enough guys to help. And that happened a few times when he got right to the rim. But when it was just Melo out there, or when they were like, we got to get the ball to Melo right now, and, like, basically above that left elbow pretty much all night, like, where he got locked in a similar battle with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in two games over the weekend. In the first game, he was able to knock them all down, even with Kidd-Gilchrist sort of right in his grill. Second game, not quite as much. This game, not quite as much. And there's a point where you can't go 4-for-19 when you have two other scoring options on your team, one of which is working really well, and one of which is a 7-3 three-point shooter that should be able to draw attention away from you. At a certain point, you gotta give it up. And if it's not going in that night, then it's not going in that night. He's been willing to do that in some games, but in others, they've sort of forced it into him, and he's taken that forcing and run with it rather than being like, all right, I'm going to get guys more involved. My shot's not working. Not being able to get to my spots, and I thought that was something that really hurt them in this one.
All right, here's my question, which I teased, like, I feel like 5 minutes ago. But here's my question. Tell me if I'm being part of, like, the Homer Oklahoma City media when I take this mentality. I want to hear your you know, outside of the Thunder world opinion on this. I don't expect you to put together a whole team right now. Isn't it crazy to say that Andre Roberson is having an all-defensive season right now?
I don't think it's crazy. I don't know if he would definitely make, like, a final ballot that I put together if I was putting together right now, but I do not think it's crazy at all. I think that you can pretty easily make a good argument for him, especially if you consider him a forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that will help him is that he starts a small forward, but he guards a ton of guards. So, like, you can really make an argument that he's a forward or a guard when you're putting together that team.
Yeah, I think that gives him a pretty good shot. I don't know. Again, I don't know if he'd necessarily get it, but it's definitely not crazy, and I don't think it's a homer type of thing.
Okay, fair enough.
One of the last things I want to talk about here, because I know you got to get on the subway and get home. We speculated before the game that if Cantor was really doing damage to the Knicks' bigs, that it might be best for the Knicks to go quote-unquote small with their 7'3 three-point shooter at center to try to play him off the court. The Knicks did not do that, despite the fact that Cantor was dominating their big lineups. Did that surprise you? How much did that surprise you? Do you think Billy Donovan would have actually taken him off the floor, given how well he was playing, if the Knicks had started taking advantage of him defensively?
It's surprising. It's something that I thought about. I mean, maybe you obviously watched more Knicks than I have. I thought Hornacek was going to go that route because they had used Porzingis as a five in the second unit. Like, it's not an unfounded thing that we said that they haven't done. Like, that's something that they've done a decent enough amount to where I thought it was going to be useful for them. I don't think that, like, Sunas, especially with the way that Cantor was playing, because he was really great offensively tonight. He had one move where I was just like, he's so graceful on the offensive end. Like, he had one move where he had that spin move on Noah, yep. And then he finished with, like, an up and under after the spin move, and I was just like, man, like, it's kind of amazing that a guy can look so fluid on one end and kind of look like, you know, his feet are kind of nailed down on the other. But I don't think, especially with the way he was playing, that, like, if they run out, Porzingis at five, Billy's just going to be like, all right, time to remove Cantor. I think he's still going to give Cantor a shot. And if Cantor can, if he's that on fire, because he can get that on fire, like, he's a great offensive player. If he's that on fire, he can just get back what he gives on the defensive end, and maybe you take it, and maybe they don't go with that lineup again. But if it doesn't work, if, you know, Porzingis is getting open threes and, you know, maybe even worse, you know, Cantor is running out of position or something, and the rest of the defense is scrambling, and the Knicks are getting open layups and open shots all around, and it's not just Porzingis out of it. Like, maybe Billy does pull the trigger on it after 3 or 4 minutes of it not working, and if you keep running Porzingis out there at the five, you can play Cantor off the floor. Like, that's something that Billy he's done that. Like, he's had games where he's put Cantor in, and defenses have attacked him, and it hasn't worked. Like, the Golden State game is the prime example. Now, Golden State is, like, the worst matchup for Cantor in the league because of the way the roster is constructed and just the quality of those types of players on top of it. But, like, Cantor played 4 minutes in that game, and it wasn't just because of the actual players on that team and the quality of that roster and the type of that roster. It was also because, like, as soon as Cantor came in, they just ran pick and roll on him, like, four plays in a row, and scored, and it just didn't work, and he played 4 minutes in that game. And so Billy has shown, and it's happened in some other games too, where Cantor just has played single-digit minutes and it's because of that kind of stuff. So he's shown a propensity to pull Cantor in those sorts of matchups. Now, when he's that hot like he was tonight, maybe that adjusts things. But I was surprised it didn't happen. Were you?
Yeah, first of all, that spin move into up and under thing was ridiculous. And I did say earlier in the year that I think he has the greatest differential between offensive foot speed and defensive foot speed of any player in the league. I don't think it's particularly close. I think it's pretty obvious. Maybe somebody like Tony Parker might be in a similar situation.
That's a good one. I was thinking big man, but Tony Parker's a good one.
Yeah. It surprised me somewhat that Hornacek didn't try to go to that, because he has gone to KP at center pretty liberally, especially over the last 7-8 games or so. But he has also said that he wants to, if he can, keep KP away from bigger centers for the whole night. So, like, he didn't do it much against Detroit, and then he didn't do it much tonight with Cantor and Adams. So it's something where he is playing to the other team's matchup on pretty much a night-to-night basis. And sometimes that works really well for you, but if you're playing to the other team's matchup and it's not working, I feel like you have to at least make them think about changing what they're doing especially if the guy that you're trying to avoid having kill you is actually killing you. You need to make them think about changing their decision by, you know, making the first chess move and changing yours. For him to not do that, I thought was a pretty big tactical error.
And you know what's interesting about your comment just now is that I think Billy Donovan, for the most part, he plays to the other team's matchups too, and talks pretty openly about how he plays to the other team's matchups. I think this roster kind of forces him to do that because they have a lot of specialists, they have a lot of one way guys, you know, all offense or all defense types of players, and I think maybe you do have to play that way a little bit more when you do have a roster like that. But we kind of saw, right? Like what two coaches whose tendencies, it's not a bad thing if you play to the other team's matchups or not. I mean, I don't think that's
sometimes that works.
Yeah. I mean, it's a preference. I think it's a style. Tonight we kind of saw an example of what happens when you have two coaches who employ that kind of style pretty consistently go against each other and kind of how it can result.
Yeah. I would be very interested to see the next time these two teams play, if Hornacek tries to dictate to Donovan that the Knicks are going to go small and see how Donovan answers that. If he doesn't do that, that's going to be sort of an interesting tell in that while he will react to the opponent on a game-to-game basis, he's going to react the same way to most opponents, whether it works or not, if that makes sense.
It does. I was really disappointed we didn't get to see Adams Kanter versus Noah O'Quinn frontcourt, like purely for hair reasons.
That would have been pretty funny.
I think that's arguably the best hair versus hair frontcourt matchup in the league.
Well, Kyle doesn't have any hair.
No, but he has the best beard.
Yeah, he does have a pretty great beard.
He has the greatest beard. His beard grows like about a centimeter below his eye.
Yeah. It's definitely the highest beard in the league. Yes.
Oh,
no question.
It's one of the highest beards I've ever seen on a man. Like it's so full. Like it's my beard like gets like, you know, less full the higher it goes, you know, and then you've got like some sparse hairs like maybe an inch or an inch and a quarter below the eye that you have to trim in order to kind of tame the beard, you know? And like his just goes like a centimeter below the eye. It's just like a forest.
Maybe it's possible that he just never shaved that part of his face and now it grows up there naturally. Because I know for me, I've always shaved that part so it doesn't get up there. You know, I'm a beard man myself, but it doesn't grow there because I've always cut it down. So maybe if I never cut it, it would grow like halfway across my face to directly under my eye, you know?
I just think we don't have Kyle O'Quinn's beard growing ability. I think we have to learn to deal with it and move on.
Fred, you've seen how luxurious my beard gets. I definitely have that growing ability. It just doesn't grow to the middle of my face, like next to my nose.
Yeah, but the O'Quinn thing is like, it actually looks like from far away, it looks like a fake beard.
It kind of does.
It looks like a beard that you would get at like a costume shop from far away. It like looks, it's so thick.
Had we met each other yet when I was graduating from law school and had my my bar exam beard? Did you ever see that?
I don't think I had the honor of seeing that one.
Oh, that was pretty epic.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that one. My beard used to be thicker than it is now, but it was never Kyle O'Quinn.
No, it wasn't like...
Kyle O'Quinn's is a pretty one.
Yeah, it didn't grow like to midway through my face. It was just, it was long and it was thick and it was, like I used to have to like brush it. Because I didn't shave basically from law school graduation until I took the bar.
That sounds wonderful.
Which was like 2.5 months. All I did was like trim the neck so that it wasn't like a full-on neck beard. But other than that, I just let it grow. And, you know, you've seen my beard when I don't shave for a week and how long it is. Imagine 2.5 months. It was a thing of, I wouldn't call it a thing of beauty because it was not beautiful, but it was It was what I had to do for the bar exam at the time.
I just Noah. At least we got Noah versus Adam, which is a really solid one. Also, I did not realize in intros that they say from Hell's Kitchen.
Oh yeah, he asked them to do that, I believe.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
It's similar to, you know, Rose had, like, Chicago Zone or whatever they called him when he was in Chicago, rather than saying he was from Memphis. Noah got the same thing when he came
back. I'm all for him saying he's from New York. But I feel like Hell's Kitchen is kind of far down on the neighborhood rankings.
Oh, well, you know, I would imagine that that Daredevil would have something to say about that.
I feel like nobody says I'm from Hell's Kitchen.
Do you think that maybe if Daredevil hadn't been on Netflix, that the Hell's Kitchen would not ring out as much as a name anymore, and might have just said, like, from New York City, but that the success of Daredevil Season 1, if not necessarily Season 2, brought him to say he's from Hell's Kitchen?
That, my friends, is a shoot-around question that you need, or a practice question, or post-game, or a pre-game question. Don't care when.
Well, it's definitely not going to be pregame. Everybody knows no Knicks are in the locker room before the game.
Yes, that is true. But that is a question that you now have, like, a moral responsibility to ask.
Oh,
because
God.
Here's the thing. If you were from, like, if it said from the Lower East Side, or from, like, a million different neighborhoods, from Williamsburg, like, there's so many neighborhoods in New York. From Greenwich Village, like, there are so many neighborhoods in New York.
Or just, like, from the Bronx, or Coney Island, or...
Yes.
Like, anything.
For sure. Hey, so many of them. From Tribeca. From Harlem. Like, there are a million neighborhoods that I think of in New York. If you just said name neighborhoods in New York, I'd name so many before I got to Hell's Kitchen. I feel like Hell's Kitchen doesn't have that name recognition. Like, I feel like...
You might as well say,
New York's own, or,
from Midtown West, Joaquin Noah.
I would actually maybe say Midtown West instead of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, when I say, like, when I'm going to that area of the city, I would never say, like, I'm going to Hell's Kitchen. I'd be like, oh, I'm going over to the west side.
Exactly. There you go. This is further proving my point. So I want to know. You got to ask that question. How many people, like, from Oklahoma have turned this off already?
Do you want to discuss Oklahoma City neighborhoods next? The only one I know is wherever KD's restaurant is.
Bricktown. There you go. Bricktown's a cool place. I like Bricktown.
Has anybody ever been introduced as from Bricktown for the Thunder? Probably not.
I don't think there have never been any Thunder players from Bricktown. I don't think there have been any NBA players from Bricktown.
Well, maybe we got to get some Bricktown guys out there.
Gonna happen. There's some from Oklahoma City. Epe Udo's from Oklahoma City. And Josh Richardson's from Oklahoma City.
Epe Udo, plus minus.
I remember that. That was a thing.
Yeah, that
with
was...
With Mark Jackson.
Yeah, back in the early True Hoop Network days, Epe Udo's plus minus was a big thing on the True Hoop Network thread for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was when Mark Jackson was coaching the Warriors.
Yeah, good times. Or not.
Great times. I think we've officially gone off the rails.
We have 100% gone off the rails. So this is as good a place as any to wrap things up, I would bet.
Yeah, exactly. These guys are like looking at me, and they're not just, they've been trying to be quiet as they clean out the garbage, and now they're just like, they've given up. They're just screaming across the hallway at each other now, I think.
Speaking of giving up, let's give up on recording more of this podcast.
Yes. Let's do it. Can you hear that Avril Lavigne playing in the background right now?
I cannot, but maybe the listeners can.
Beautiful. All right. Hey, do you have anything to plug? Your J.A. Dubin 5 on Twitter?
Yeah.
Anything
I'm J.A. Dubin 5 on Twitter. Don't follow me.
listen, I can back that up. Definitely don't follow Jared.
Yeah,
and,
I'm annoying.
And listen to Locked On Knicks. You can download Locked On Knicks. Listen to Locked On Knicks. Download Locked On Thunder. Listen to Locked On Thunder, go to normaltranscript.com and check out Thunder stuff there. We good?
We good.
All right, I appreciate you coming on. I'm sure you appreciate me coming on for the Locked On Knicks people. And back with another show tomorrow. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.